dark matter. We're finally going to discuss this most elusive of ideas. So elusive that no one's actually seen any, collected any, even written basic equations for this thing called dark matter. In fact, if you can work out what it is or collect any, just rock up to Stockholm and get yourself a Nobel Prize. You'll probably be the most one of the most famous scientists in human history if you can work out what's going on. And when you listen to the story, you'll realise that dark matter has affected the Earth. It's not inconsequential. It has affected the Earth, put us through different phases on Earth, and really been the origin of complex life. The actual trials that dark matter has put the Earth through has actually created the fulcrum, or the crucible, sorry, there's a better word for it, crucible in which life, complex life, has emerged on Earth. So they're big claims. This is Peter Hill Explains. There's a subtext here of me learning to do podcasts and structure podcasts. There's things about the overall skill level. There's also the structure level. And I often want to tackle more complex problems like dark matter. But this one, I've said, oh, look, I have to give you a few preparation podcasts. So I'll advertise some preparation podcasts just before this, dealing with Kepler. So dark matter, the signature, the only thing that we can see about dark matter, its mysterious effect on other matter, its gravitational effect. And to do gravitational effects, you have to do gravitational accounting. To do gravitational accounting, you have to do gravitational audit of our galaxy. To do the gravitational audit of our galaxy, we have to start measuring. Like the Doomsday Book, we have to actually see every star we can't see, and sort of tally it up and work out how much mass there is there. And to do that, we have to have cunning techniques to look at a star through a telescope, see it out there in space, a certain brightness, a certain distance, a certain colour, and by various tricks work out how heavy it is, account for it, and account for the mass. So the dark matter is the unaccounted for mass. It's a mass that we can see on one ledger, but on the other ledger of visible stuff, which you can count, it's missing. So we've done the audit, the accounts, mass accounts of our universe, our galaxy, and we've said, hang on, there must be dark matter. And everyone has sort of agreed that there must be dark matter, but no one's ever seen it. No one's ever actually touched it or found it in a detector. There's heaps of different theories out there stretching it, and almost no matter how many billions of dollars we throw at it, no matter how big our exotic detectors are, we can't see it. So let's get into our story. What I want to do is paint a picture of our galaxy. We'll start off normally, and you won't be worried. I think by the end of listening to this, you'll be alert but not alarmed. You'll be a bit concerned about what you're to hear. So our galaxy is a spiral galaxy. We actually don't know how many spirals there are, because we're in the one place which is really hard to look at our galaxy, which is inside it. There's at least seven arms that we can see, so little short arms, very big arms. And these are curved little spirals, so I'm going to give you an idea of a cappuccino and some it's the central froth, and it's spinning. A better view is, say, pumpkin soup, where you've actually put some sorry if you give me for coughing, some cream in the top of it, and made it into a spiral, and actually gently stirred your soup, and it's formed what is a star shape into a spiral. These spirals are there, and it's quite easy to think of a spiral like a hubcap of a modern car with those bars going out, or bent bars. That's quite a nice inanimate object, and it's actually spinning around in space. And now it's not very far into our journey, which we start to talk about dark matter, or density waves. So waves you see, if you imagine above the galaxy looking down, you'll see the bright central core. You'll probably see above it a conical eerie blue or eerie X-ray disc or sort of cone, ice cream cone coming up and above it, above and below, due to a black hole emitting huge amounts of X-ray radiation. Indeed, in the very centre of the cluster, I'm not going to give you dimensions because that will just confuse. You don't need to know it. You need to know that's a roughly a pancake structure. In fact, to give you an idea, it is actual fact a pancake you would eat with ice cream in the centre, and that ice scale is that 1 millimetre equals 1,000 light years, or a micron equals a light year. And so at 100,000 light years side to side is 100 millimetres is 10 centimetres. It's just a small pancake with a scoop of ice cream in the centre. That's one way to imagine it. But the it's not a uniform pancake. There are these spirals on the outside. And we'll get into what those spirals are. But here's the first piece of information. That galaxy, it's moving through space. It's a large galaxy, and it's gently rotating. And it rotates 4 times every billion years. So every 250 million years, a billion years is 1,000 million years, it does a rotation. Something rotating 4 times a year is taking, it's spinning. So if you get your hand and you do a circle, and you do 4 circles a second, and a second is a billion years, see if you can actually do that with your hand, rotate around, and you have to put your hand at a fair speed for it to rotate. And if you count 13.8 seconds of your hand rotating, and you say skip the first second, start rotating after that, fairly quickly, I'm trying to do it at the moment, you'll get a sense of how much our galaxy has spun since the beginning of time, because time began 13.8 billion years ago, or G years, capital G for a billion, or giga years ago, and we know this, and we're not going to go into the science of it, but we can actually, as we look in our telescopes, we look back in time. So if you hold your arm out and look at your wristwatch, as far, say it's a metre away, if you're a big person, that wristwatch is 3 nanoseconds into the past. The moon is a second and a quarter into the past. The sun is 8 minutes in the past. The nearest star is about 4 years in the past. A galactic centre, I'm just trying to work this one out, is roughly 30,000 years into the past. So we're getting modern man going into Europe and starting to spread out of Africa, start of times. This is the light that we can see from the centre of the galaxy to the edge of the galaxy. This is a long time. So light, as far as our spinning galaxy, is travelling really, really slowly. 10,000 years, but it takes 250 billion years to do a rotation. But a rotation is not what you think it is. It's not like a plate with a pattern on it and it's simply rotating. It's more like you're flying above these stars, and the stars are like traffic going in lanes. They go roughly in circular lanes, and they don't travel on a road. They travel bouncing above and below the galactic plane. So it's like a yo-yo, it's like a spring. So when they travel too much above the galactic plane, they see an overall gravitational force which turns them I don't know what's happening to these birds off the side here, sorry if these Aussie birds are interrupting this broadcast, if they're above the galactic plane, they get pulled down and they slam down through the galactic plane, maximum speed, and plunge beneath the galactic plane and bounce up and down. So if you'd like, they go in a circle. They don't go neat circular orbit. They go in a crazy wobbly orbit going up and up and down. And we can see this because in a previous episode it's saying that besides seeing a star, we see a star's overall spectrum, see how hot it is, but it's got its little lines on it, these ultrafine lines, and we can track the speed of a car and the speed of a sun pretty much to the same accuracy in terms of kilometres an hour above and below. So not only can we take a picture of our galaxy and now and actually get it in three-dimensional, the distance to every star. This is amazing stuff. So now microscopes, we can focal microscopes, we can take a microscope picture of something and get it in three dimensions and spin it around in a computer, or we can take a three-dimensional picture of you in a magnetic resonance imaging machine, MRI machine, and we can spin it around in a computer. So too with space, our telescopes are that powerful that they can actually read off the speed and position of stars. Incredible to think. And push this in a computer, put it in a data file, and we can actually virtually fly through the universe. And indeed, you can do this for free by downloading Celestia. Just type in download Celestia, and I guarantee you'll have heaps of fun traveling through our galaxy, surrounding galactic group, in actual fact, between stars. It's super accurately. That's for free. That's the software that you can do. So this galaxy has got a trillion stars, 2 trillion stars inside it. So that's an incredible, that's thousands of billions of stars, a million stars. There's more cells in the human body than there are stars in the galaxy, just to give you a little sense of the staggering figures that we are. We're an organism with a trillion cells, understanding a galaxy of a trillion trillion stars. Look it up and know it. I really haven't prepared this. The aim of these podcasts is to increase the accuracy and speed production of explanations ready for street fighting of explaining and talking with students. And obviously the challenge is the more you know, the more you have to explain, the more easy it is to leave people confused. So I'm trying to not do that for you and not do it for my students down the track. So we've got a whole lot of little things moving. Imagine those stars which are travelling in a circle, are little cars, and they're travelling along a circular freeway going all around the galaxy. This overall galaxy is spinning like the map. It's like if it's a map, geographic map, that map is being slowly spun around every quarter of a billion years. And if you look down, if you were to look down on the little cars travelling along here at a distance, the little cars are doing something rather funny. Rather than actually parked and staying stationary and staying in their geographic position with respect to their arms, they're actually travelling much faster. And our sun, for instance, travels around the galaxy every 100 million years. That means that by the time it's actually spinning around the galaxy, going from arm to arm, every 100 million years. And what it is, the actual bar arms are actually star traffic jams. So the stars will accelerate their motion and increase their motion in the dark matter region. So I shouldn't give this away. In the dark regions. And they'll travel very quickly. And so if you watch traffic from above, the cars which actually come out of a traffic jam spread apart. And if they had lights, their lights on, it was at night, say in fog, and you could see the car lights from above, you'd see that the car lights would be more packed together where there was a traffic jam, and when the traffic jam finished, that speed up. Indeed, our little sun has been travelling between galactic arms. And when it travels between galactic arms, the stars are more spread apart. And so as far as we could see, the stars would move away from us. The galactic center would be the same, the southern hemisphere would be the same, but the northern hemisphere and everywhere else, the stars would appear to move further away and the night sky would be darker. That is, where a sun would be traveling faster, but we would be traveling faster through that dark region, and looking up and around, we'd see a darker space. And then we would come in to the next arm and slow down. So this is a problem, that we are traveling too fast for the orbit of the galaxy. We're actually speeding up. So there's something going on. And so this is the arms of the Milky Way are not fixed arms. And this sort of makes sense. They are pressure waves. And now this has an effect on human history, which I want to get up. So this is, again, how do I know this? I've just basically read scientific papers. I've read New Scientist in detail and paid attention and put all the story together. So again, you can check all of this out. And look, I could be wrong. I'd love it if I was wrong and stories would come up. But these times of going into the depths of a galactic arm means that we go into the teeth of more stars and we get more cosmic rays, more radiation, more cloud formation. And so these long-term, over millions of years, ice ages are associated with our travelling through galactic arms. So in the time of the dinosaurs, we've been through a fair number. So the dinosaurs, the modern life, is 500 million years ago. So that's actually five loops. Around 500 million years ago is the really the start of eukaryotic animals. So if we, I think when it came out of one snowball Earth, and we began to get multicellular organisms, and as it comes along, around 350 million years ago, we had quite sophisticated fish. Dinosaurs, 270 million years. Oh, look, really, these are numbers just floating off the top of my head. I know that 64 million years ago, we had the asteroid come in, and the dinosaurs were at their peak for 120 million years. 120 million years is a full orbit of the galaxy. And so in this time, the actual centre of the galaxy, as seen from the southern hemisphere, would have swapped, moved to the northern and southern hemispheres. It's a pretty amazing thing to look at. The important thing is that moving through arms changes the overall weather and puts us through this succession of ice ages. And so, again, there's a New Scientist article out. Now, look, it may be wrong. Let's hope it is wrong. But this is the latest theory, that these big weather, long-term weather events on the million-year scale are to do... the multi-million, tens of million year scale, it's to do with our orbit through the galaxy. Now, I'm sure there'll be a new theory out, and I, of course, will be reading the literature to see it, but this is what we know at the moment. A bit of sort of speculation. Why would I have a dark region of the space with nothing in it, which has a gravitational thing which accelerates me through? Now, there is a certain amount of thing, there is a sort of amount of star motion energy moving up and down. So if I do less up and down bouncing and do more moving across, you can imagine how you can convert your motion energy to bouncing, to actually moving across. So you can sort of see how you don't have to play around with the kinetic energy too much. And again, there's no paper on this. I haven't read papers on it, but my overall feeling is that the dark parts of the galaxy that you've seen from above are perhaps dark matter, some sort of structure of dark matter which pulls us through, and that's a stationary sense. So this is one of the sort of take-home messages. The overall galaxy is like your soup, and you've spun it enough so it's gone into these, you've got pumpkin soup and you've got cream on the inside, and you've actually swirled it a bit. You've run your spoon around and created these swirls. And if you rotate your plate, you'll see this go across. And that's really an optical illusion, because inside the actual stars, the actual things are moving, running from one arm to the next. And this is a bit of a surprising story. And so I have, in the back of my mind, I have sort of, how does the dynamics of this actually work? And I've actually, some in my head, and this is with no authority, some dark matter explanation of it. But it's not the main thing that we see in our galaxy and see in heaps of other galaxies. We look up to heaps of other galaxies and we can measure the speed of stars. What's happening is that the actual speed of stars as you go out are travelling far too fast compared to the stars on the inside. And so what this means is that the speed of orbit as you go out is telling you how much mass is inside that orbit. And so what this is saying is that as I move outwards from the centre of the galaxy out to the rim, I somehow pick up some extra mass, because as I move out a certain amount, the stars don't slow down, the gravitational field doesn't get less, it actually increases and compare from what it should be from a central mass. And so this tells us that there is a shell of some matter, which we don't know what it is, so therefore it is a dark matter. And we in space we have these shells all the time. So on Earth we have, or in our solar system, we have a shell of about, I think between 5 and 30 Earth masses of ice, mini worlds, micro worlds in the Oort belt as a shell of matter, a light shell of matter. Of course, this is a very significant shell of matter. Another example is the globular clusters. The globular clusters, which are a small mini galaxies. They're spherical galaxies. There's no shape to them. They're very ancient galaxies, mini galaxies, and they are orbiting in a shell around the centre of our galaxy. So you've got your open clusters like the Pleiades, which is the Superu symbol. You'll see it. It's a real standout star cluster. So you see stars all over the place. There's generally about, about a hand span between stars, a finger length between any two bright stars. But the Pleiades, there's about seven stars, seven sisters, in the size of a little area, the size of a moon or the end of your little finger at a distance. And that's an open cluster. And those open clusters exist in the galactic plane. We sort of know how they produce their relatively young sort of starburst areas of clusters. But the globular clusters are ancient clusters. So we do have these domes and disks. The big question is that we have evidence for our galaxy. Now, we've got other evidence of dark matter doing other sorts of strange and weird things out there. That's forming a disk, and we are actually inside the hollow shell, or there's a hollow shell of dark matter going around the place. And I'd like to sort of discuss that in a little bit, because there's sort of so many questions that I have. The most recent discovery is a bit of a clanger, and I've forgotten the name. It's NC. I visualise the number, but I can't read the number. It's a galaxy recently discovered where there ain't no dark matter. Aha! We've discovered a galaxy without any dark matter. And you follow the logic of it. And one of the logic is that by discovering a galaxy without any dark matter, we have proven that every other galaxy that we've seen has a variable amount of dark matter in it. It's one of these great discoveries. Now, one of the things that what dark matter is it a thing, or is it an energy field? Is it something big? It's something which can travel through normal matter. It's one of the things that I sort of could imagine it being a dark blob orbiting, like a comet going into the centre of the galaxy and spending a long time of slow orbit on the outside. So our comets and asteroid belts are in a shell. One of the things that I suppose I noted is that I don't think dark matter can be actually come into the size of a planet or come into a planet, because if it was like that, you would see dark matter scattering other stars. I'm not sure. There's heaps of things. A question I have is, can dark matter fall? It's got mass. So one of the things about dark matter is it's got mass, gravitational attraction, and nothing else. Can dark matter fall into a black hole? And if it does fall into a black hole, would not that emit a lot of energy in that process? Because it's mass, and mass falls into holes. Dark matter bends light. That's one thing that we can see. The quantity of dark matter in a region is evident by the amount of light bending. So it's got things to do with space and things like that. But there's all these questions and theories out there. However, if you can sort of we'll step back and retake this journey very quickly. What I've done in the first thing is give you a basic understanding of Kepler's laws. And then I've started to open up your mind to the fact that when we look in space, in augmented reality, which is really our learning augmentation of the reality of seeing our stars, we can see the stars now and start to add up the mass. We add up the mass, we tally it up, and the visible mass falls short of the interaction mass, and we can see some sort of mass interacting. It's the laws of physics are the same. And we're coming up with all these intriguing dead ends, and it's very easy when it comes to intriguing dead ends to forget them. But it has some important interaction, it's open for people like myself who's trying to connect the story together to make connections, innocent connections, which may be wrong. But I certainly do feel that dark matter does dictate how we orbit through the galaxy, and how we orbit through the galaxy, as far as we know, has meant that some mad guy has been fiddling with the thermostat of Earth and shaking things up. And it's shaken stuff up from the ancient bacteria to form archaic bacteria to form this enslaved bacteria, a slave eukaryotic cells, which enslave the archaic bacteria, creating a little habitat for that bacteria to break out of its ecological niches. And so eukaryotic cells are basically like a little cell universe, which has come along, and then another crisis event have meant that these have banded together to form complex organisms, which has formed eventually us, which are now questioning who's mucking up with our thermostat, what is happening. And we've now evolved to be able to look out to the universe and get these things, and eventually for you to listen to a podcast, and for you to actually tap into the augmented or science-enhanced reality. The thing is that if you can see and sense more, you can marvel at the beauty, but you can also be bewildered. And I think that's the way that we could discuss science at the moment. Scientists are bewildered and baffled as to what dark matter and dark energy is. For instance, dark energy is the energy which is powering up the expansion of the universe, and it's been unleashed, and the universe is beginning to expand and fall apart. And that dark energy You know, there's a conservation of energy idea. You can't neither create or destroy. No, but this dark energy is being, as far as we know, being created. And creation is seen as acceleration of the universe. So there's more, when we say dark is a word for saying it's there, but we haven't got a clue. So this is true for dark energy. It's there, we haven't got a clue, but it's a smoking gun to cover a lot of explanations. This beautiful traffic jam or shockwaves, or not shockwaves is the incorrect story, this is pressure waves of stars going across creates a wave of weather transitions, and that's something really to hold on to. And it's an understanding of reality which is sufficiently different from our standard beliefs. And there's this, I think, in education that all beliefs can come directly in a single step from your standard everyday experience. But in this case, I've had to take you back through and take you through these other non-realistic experiences, Kepler's law, and pressure waves and space and stuff like that to build this new picture. What can I only guarantee is that I really haven't discussed this with people, and so I hope this is correct. And I can only warn you to do your own research and read it and discuss with other experts. Probably even don't play this out to an expert, I'll be embarrassed, but use this as a stimulus. The same way that I've been stimulated from reading articles and papers and stuff like that, slowly piecing together this story and having a few chats with astronomers along the way. And they don't know what I'm talking about, but they also understand that the general public has really no idea what's going on. So hopefully this podcast will stimulate you to keep on doing science. And keep on thinking scientifically. Thanks for listening.